Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Rabideau about caching in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. Caught at Work tells us about an exciting geo game for this summer. And we give you some tips on how to use your mobile phone while out geocaching. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 36 of GeoTalk. I'm your host, Bindoc Bob. It's great to be back with you again. And the days are getting longer. Daylight savings rolled in, unless you're in Western Australia, and I think you got till the end of the month. But it's just been great geocaching weather. And if you've seen video edition number 12, which was posted up on the weekend, you would have noticed that I joined a group of three other geocachers. We went onto the Blue Mountains about 2.5 weeks ago, from memory, and did Cliffhanger, which certainly has had a bit of publicity through GeoTalk, and it was a fantastic cache. It was a lot of fun to do. And I'm really interested to see some of the other caches that are around the country, you know, from Western Australia up to Northern Territory, Queensland, South Australia, Victoria, Tasmania, even in Canberra, to find out, you know, some of the more exciting, more challenging caches that are out there and those that you love. So, you know, if you've got any video that you want to send in or you've got some audio, send it into GeoTalk. We'd love to play it. We'd love to share with everyone their favourite caches. And it's as simple as just putting in a phone number into your mobile phone and calling it in to us on 02, so it's Sydney area code, 800-50-4436. So that's 02-800-50-GEO. So try that out, and hopefully we'll be able to share a few more caches around the place. One of the things I did last weekend is I travelled down to Braidwood, or down near Braidwood, to do some maintenance on a cache that I had a DNF on recently. Now, normally I wouldn't panic on one DNF, but this is a fairly old cache. It was placed nearly 4 years ago, and it doesn't get many visitors. I think it's only had about 10 finds in those 4 years, and it's a slightly challenging walk. So I thought, well, now's a good opportunity to head down there, and Nay and Zach joined me. It's fantastic, and you can check out the pictures on the log. I'll give you a link in the show notes to the log. And it was a great walk. It was 10 kilometres. We did half of it obviously straight up the hill, and then the other half back down. But we replaced the container and replaced its location as well. Now, there were two reasons why I did that. First of all, the container, well, you know, 4 years ago I thought it was a great container, but now I've realised, after seeing a few of them out in the weather, they're not quite weatherproof. So I've replaced it with an ammo can, so that should last a lot longer and a lot better. But also the location, I placed it after I'd only been geocaching for about 6 months, and I didn't think now that I look back on it, the location was pretty bad. I mean, I hid it in amongst a whole bunch of bushes, a group of bushes that are around about shoulder height, and really there was no way you could tell where it was hidden. So it's been moved. It's in a slightly easier place to find, and hopefully it'll be around for a while longer. But just something to keep in mind, particularly for those in the Northern Hemisphere who are coming into winter. Good time now to review caches after they've been hit over the summer onslaught. And for those of us in the Southern Hemisphere, obviously we're going to get a few more finders searching for them. So maybe it's best just to check in on them all and make sure that they're doing well and that they're not affecting the environment as well. That's an important thing to keep in mind. Quickly on the Groundspeaker website, I noticed they've made a few subtle changes. One of them, which is quite interesting, if you go to their front page, geocaching.com, you'll notice now that if it's working correctly, a map should be coming up showing you the location of the nearest caches to you, and it's using your IP addresses to work out roughly where you're located. So I think it's a bit of a way for particularly new people who have never played the game before to be able to see some of the geocaches that are in their area. So check that out. An interesting thing I stumbled across the other day when I was at the GeoTalk website, there's a set of Google ads that run along the top, and quite often I have a look at those because it's interesting to see what ads come up. And one was gpsmission.com. Now, I've never heard of this before, and I decided to click on it, and it's a totally different world. It's actually a new game that's been developed, and it's primarily for GPS-enabled phones, although I presume you could probably use it on Windows mobile device as well. And it involves going through a mission that's been set up. Now, there are a few of them around the world, and I noticed even here in Sydney there are three already that have been set up. And you download the mission onto your phone, and then you have to navigate your way through the mission, completing different tasks. It's a little bit like Where I Go. So maybe, you know, it's a healthy competitor out there. And as you play it, you can pick up gold, which is part of your points that you gain, and you can win trophies. And you can also earn gold from people who complete your missions. And so it seems to be, it's certainly got a commercial bent to it. It seems to be a fairly exciting new game. It works on a range of different devices, including Nokia, Samsung, LG and HTC. So check it out. It's at gpsmission.com. Now, later in the podcast, I'll announce the winner of the two geocoins. It's a GeoTalk geocoin and a Cheesy geocoin donated by Ernie's from Switzerland. And thank you very much to Ernie from over on the other side of the world for donating that coin. He sent us a few coins, so there'll be a number of competitions over the next few weeks and months to give away those coins, so stay listening for those. But I'll be announcing the winners of a random draw of the three entries that we received for the Axis of Evil video competition. If you haven't checked it out, please download video edition number 12, or if you can't play an MP4 video file, then head to YouTube, youtube.com.au/GeoTalk, and go to episode 12 there. And you can also vote for your favorite one. So we're going to have a viewer's choice category as well, and we'll announce the winners for that a little bit later, possibly in November. So check out those. I'll give you links in the show notes on the GeoTalk website, geotalkpodcast.com. So we'll announce the winners a little bit later. All right, well, before we get into our first interview, it's time to give you the GeoTalk trivia question. And the question for this particular episode is, what percentage of caches hidden in Australia are regular size, small size, micro, large, unknown, virtual, and other? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, joining us on this episode of GeoTalk from the sunny capital down in Victoria, from Melbourne, is Dean, also known as Rabideau. How are you going?
G'day, Darren. How are you today?
I'm good. Now, they say it's four seasons in one day down there. It must make geocaching quite interesting.
Oh, yes. Spring's nearly here, but for all good geocaches down here, no matter what the weather is, you're out there, you're in there doing it. If it's going to rain, you don't believe it. You just go out, and if it rains, you might stay in the car for a couple of minutes, and then you decide you're going to get wet anyway. So
great. And if you get wet, the sun's going to dry you out pretty soon afterwards anyway.
It's amazing how many times that happens down here.
Well, being an old Melbournian, I know what it's all about. I watch too many football games at the old Waverley Park, which is out your way. Now, you're from the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. Tell us a little bit about caching in the eastern suburbs of what is the second biggest city in Australia.
Well, there you go. Yeah, the eastern suburbs here. There's whichever direction you go from here, like 20 kilometres in each direction from where we are, sort of in the central part of the eastern suburbs. You've just got such a diverse range of geocaches from this point. Go to the west, you're into the city caching if you want to do that. Head to the east, you're into rainforests and bushwalks and mountains. 20 kilometres to the south, you're down on Mornington Peninsula and beaches, and the caches down that way. Head up north and you're on the Yarra, and you know, caching along in various areas here. It's just so varied in such a short area, or such a short distance on where you go.
It sounds like I'm missing a lot, because every time I come down to Melbourne, I sort of concentrate on either the CBD or the western suburbs, but certainly those who have head down there should get around in the east and see some of that diversity that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to see, and it's just great, you know, right through. You mentioned Waverley Park. I do have a cache at Waverley Park. It's very sad from the football point of view, because it's actually a suburb with some very, very small boxy houses in there. They're trying to make as much of the land as they can, and there's only one little part of the stand in Arctic Park still there, but I do have the cache there, so.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you've been geocaching for pretty much as long as I have. I mean, we're kind of not the very early starters, but not far afterwards, are we?
Yeah, we're probably in the second generation, I suppose. We started at the beginning of 2004. A friend of mine over in South Australia, where we were originally from, over in Renmark, had bought himself a little gecko and said, you know, he was showing me different things, and I sort of was semi-interested in this, in the gecko, and he was using it out in a wilderness area near Renmark to plot mallee fowl nests and keep track of various things in this area for conservation, which was sort of semi interesting. And then he showed me this site about geocaching, and the rest is history.
Now tell us a bit about your name. You called the Rabbitohs.
Yes, or just Rabbitohs is just the thing. It's just a name that stuck from many years ago. I'd love to say there's a big flowery history on it, but I really, to say where it started, I really couldn't pinpoint it. A lot of people will say to me, oh, Rabbitoh, that's interesting. How did that come about? And it's really not that interesting at all. I could say we did used to go out and back in the country area and chase rabbits around and catch quite a lot of them as well, but it didn't really spring from there, although it would be a fitting sort of way to come through. It's just a name that stuck for a long time.
What is it that you enjoy about geocaching? What is the aspect of it that keeps you going?
I think the one aspect that keeps me going on it is that there's not one aspect, if that's a bit of a conundrum. But if it was just for one particular thing, I don't think it would hold my interest. But there's so many aspects to geocaching that I really enjoy. And I'd looked at different things or clubs or anything like that to get into, or what I really wanted to get into back when I started, which is not quite 5 years ago now when we began. And when I was sort of shown it, and I thought, well, this is not too bad, and it, you know, from the point of view, there's you know, you can do it whenever you want. It's not like you have to go out on a Saturday from 2 till 4 and be at a certain place and do it at a certain time. It's up to you to, you know, go and plan the day where you want to. Another big aspect is the people, and that's just one of the fantastic things, and some fantastic people we've met from right around Australia, and ones we haven't met in person, we've spoken to, or through the forums, emailed back and forth to, and it's just this relationship with all the people, but last but not least, the fact that wherever you go, you get a fantastic guided tour of places that you would never have known about, or, you know, just quirky little spots, you know, right from little backyard place in cities to mountain tops and fern gullies. It's so diverse and it's great. Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons why I was speaking to you is that you've been involved with a few of local caches in setting up a fairly big series called the East Link series. Tell us a little bit about that.
We called it the Great East Link Geocache Project, which just came about one day when a few of us, Team Crackers, a well-known caching team, had set up a few caches over in the Bunyip Park, which were four-wheel drive only. There was quite a few, about half a dozen other caching teams. We all got together, and including Team Crackers, and went along and did all these caches, and the presses, from P Press, had invited us back for a barbecue that night at their place. And as we're all sitting around enjoying the company, we were talking about this new tollway. And for listeners from other states who are probably not aware, the East Link is a north-south freeway that runs straight through eastern suburbs of Melbourne, all the way from Ringwood right down to Frankston. So it was a very big roadblock for people here. It's an area that just had no caches at all, really, although there was one cache had put a couple there. And we said, oh, we should all just put a cache each and make a bit of a series. And from that, that would be about half a dozen caches. And we thought, well, I'll email a few people and ring a couple of other people and see if there'd be anyone else interested in joining up. And before long, we had, you know, it went from 6 to about a dozen. And then we started thinking, well, this is actually getting fairly large. And we were still from the new people who were coming, say, what about this person or what about this team? And it grew. And we started thinking, well, this is going to be fairly unique. It's actually going to be what would become the largest geocache series in Australia, where every geocache is owned by a different team. And by the time within 3 weeks, we'd had 25 caches spanning from one end to the other, and just ended up being a very nice tour of the whole the EastLink project.
Are they interconnected in any way? Like, do you need to find one to find another?
No, we did speak about that, and we said no, we'd rather just have it where people can enjoy them. It's a very long tollway. I want to say freeway, but I always hold myself because it is tolled from one end to the other. But we thought it's probably about 30-odd kilometres long, and for someone to have to go to a K-series like that, it can be a bit unenjoyable, I think, to try and put that sort of pressure from to have to complete the whole thing or to make a big puzzle with a heap of puzzle pieces or anything like that along there. So we just decided we'd keep it simple. 25 traditional caches, except there is one multi in there, apart from the whole thing, and that's only a very short one. So it's mainly just to highlight and create the series. So that was the intent, and that's, I think, what we ended up doing.
Has anyone completed the whole series yet?
I think probably most people who live around here have done it. I actually went through on the day and completed all the other caches I could. One cache, unfortunately, didn't get legs, and we're still waiting for that one to come back online. But other than that, it's probably not a arduous task to go through and gradually pick up the caches all the way through in a day. So it's not a hard sort of series, and it's fairly easy to hop on and off the tollway and pick up all the caches on the way through. All the hides are fairly simple. It's just a nice, pleasant day and tour, I think.
You mentioned that one of the great aspects about geocaching is meeting different people. I mean, you're from that area where Dak or Dave Kruger came from. Tell me a little bit about some of your memories of Dak.
Dak and I started caching almost the same time. I think he was 2 or 3 months beforehand, and by the time I'd started, he probably only had about 100 caches or so on the board, and really hadn't sort of got going, I suppose, and to the state of caching madness that he was famous for later on in his caching career. I first met Dak at an event down at Geelong, which was hosted by Joe Macamob's daughter, which was a cacheopoly. It was just such a fantastic event. And I think for both of us at that time, to become part of the network and the caching network, because neither of us had really met any other geocaches at that time, and to get the people aspect that I spoke about before, I think for both of us that was a real key and a real link in the whole geocaching thing, and Dak was just mad about it. He was just loved it. And I'd been out on a couple of geocaching trips with Dak. One day out with Emby, we went out and through Ballarat, and and just to learn, Dak and be with Dak. It's just a great day. Another day we went up with Muzza P Press and I think X2 Youth Group. We went up and did a bit around the side of Bendigo and out there. And both of those 2 days, it's just an education. There's a lot of Dakisms you pick up on the way through too. Like if you're going out, pack your lunch. There's if you're spending half an hour buying something at a takeaway shop, you're not out there geocaching. And and his planning. He'll go out and plan for an hour, which will save you 3 hours on the road, and not only petrol wise, but time wise. If you're going around to different spots, he was a planner, and just a likable guy, and a guy who really put himself out for people, and it's great to have known Dak, and very, very sad to see a good friend as he became passed away so fairly young.
And you were saying, I mean, he had such a big impact right around the country, because he did get around to meet many people, that he had quite a few people come from fair distance to his funeral.
Look, he did, yes, And to link the two things we've been talking about with the Great EastLink Geocache project. I mean, Dak had been fairly crook for a while, and he was when we started the idea of the whole project. It ended up being only a couple of weeks before he passed away. We had the event on the board, and that had just coincidentally ended up being the day after his funeral, and teams from around Australia, and he'd built up such a respect, people actually flew over to be at his funeral for other geocaching teams and well-known teams, Freddo, Team Astro, Skippy, SA Parrothead from South Australia, I think Hawmore Fords. One of their team had flown down from Queensland, and just the amount of geocaching people that were there at the funeral, and we got a great chance the next day at the event. Eric from X2, who was a well-known DAC's best geocaching buddy, just gave at the event cache a terrific sort of just few minutes talking about DAC and what he liked and what he brought to the whole sport, not that it's a great thing for this to happen, but you know, the timing wise for everything, it couldn't have been more perfect for us to be together and grieve together and remember DAC together. So not a great time, but on the other hand, it was a celebration of him, I suppose. So the whole thing just linked together.
Thanks very much, Dean, for giving us a bit of an insight about some of the caches and also a bit about DAC and the series that you've set down there. Obviously, summer's coming along, so you guys down there, like most parts of the country, are going to be expecting an explosion of geocaches over spring and plenty more hours in which to go finding them.
Yeah, the main part is the plenty more hours to go find them. We tend to get out there no matter what the weather is, because if we're waiting for good weather down here or bad weather or otherwise, you just be waiting all the time. We just go out whenever.
Of course, down in Melbourne, it doesn't matter because it's going to rain every day, doesn't it?
We would hope so. It's amazing, the last 10 years our dam level's now fallen to about 33% at the moment, and it's the lowest it's been like ever. So, bring on the rain. We'll just wear a raincoat.
All right. Well, Dean, look, it's been great chatting to you, and thank you very much for your time and all the best in your geocaching adventures.
Thanks, Aaron. It's been great to talk to you.
Time now for the Geo Talk geocaching tip for this particular episode. And in this one, we're going to look at how you can use your mobile phone while you're out geocaching. Now, the Geocaching Australia website has a great little portal or stripped-down version of the website that you can use to search for geocaches, particularly if you know their name or you know the GC code. So what you need to do is open up the browser on your mobile phone and head to this URL. It's mobile.geocaching.com.au. So it's the same URL as the geocaching.com.au website. It's just mobile instead of www. Now, when you get to that page, it'll open up and it will have the heading Mobile Geocaching Australia, has a little text field and a search button and a number of links for the states as well as the North Island and South Island of New Zealand. So let's click on one of those links. We'll click on QLD for Queensland, and you will see that straight away you get a list, and it doesn't appear to be in any particular order, a list of caches that are in the area. Now, it'll start with any of the events that are listed, and then it will follow with a list of geocaches that have been recently placed, and it will go all the way back to, obviously, the first cache that's been hidden. So it's kind of, it's a little bit inflexible, but it's very handy for finding events in this particular format, just clicking on the link of the state. What's a little bit more powerful is using the search function, and this is very handy, particularly if you know the GC code. So in my GPS, I always load up the GC code. Some people use the actual shortened form of the name, but you know, in this particular case, I'm going to enter a GC code. Now, you use your numeric keypad to enter this in, and make sure you turn off the predictive text function, otherwise it gets a little bit messy. So I'm going to type in GCD0F8 and then click on the search button. Now, one thing just to be aware of is that Groundspeak don't use the letter O and they don't use the letter I. So if you're ever reading any of these out and you go to type them in, you're never going to type in the letter O or the letter I. That's because they don't want it to get confused with the digit 0 and 1. So you click on the search and it comes up with a result and it's pole position in the ACT. You can click on that link and then you will see a very basic text description of the cache. And it turns out that it's one of my old caches that I've adopted out to the S's. And it's pole position. It was hidden in February 2003 and it's located in Lynham in the ACT. It gives you the GPS coordinates, it gives you the difficulty and terrain, tells you the type and the container, and then gives you the description. One other good thing about it is it also downloads any images that are included in the description. So if the images have just been uploaded to Groundspeak's website, you won't be actually able to see them. They have to be part of the HTML description for you to be able to see them. Down below, there is a link for clicking, checking out the hints. And if you click on that link, you will notice that the hints have already been decrypted, so you will see them straight away. So don't click on that if you don't want to see the hints immediately. And then below that is a listing of all the notes and finds and did not finds and maintains and disabled and enabled and so forth, all in chronological order. So you can scan through that. You can click on the link. So, for example, I can see that on the 26th of September in 2008, it was found by Stace8383. I click on the link and they say, very neat little hide, found quite quickly or easily. So you can use that to, it's a very useful thing, particularly if you're like me and sometimes you've got the coordinates in your GPS because you've had them around for quite a while, but you forget to enter them into your phone or into your PDA. You can quickly check it up. You can also use the search field to type in the name of the cache. So if you're not too sure of the GC code and you have a rough idea what its name is, you can type that in. So, for example, we'll put in final because we know we're looking for the final cut. We click on search and we get a whole list of different caches. And towards the bottom there is the final cut. Now, one other thing you'll also notice is this displays not only the Groundspeak caches, but also GCA caches and archived caches. So just be aware that you are going to get caches that no longer exist on this list. But sometimes it's handy just to have a bit of a look through them and see what was in the area beforehand. And who knows, you may have stumbled across a cache that was archived but still hasn't been retrieved from out in the bush. So you can't use this system to actually log caches, unlike the WAP interface from Groundspeak, but it's a very handy system. I find it's very quick to use, and it's also handy if you're also looking for Geocaching Australia geocaches. So check that out. It's mobile.geocaching.com.au. Well, I'm chatting once again to Peter, also known as Caught at Work, down in Melbourne. We're going to chat about some of the caching games that have been on offer and are coming up. Welcome to GeoTalk, Peter.
Oh, thank you very much, Darren. It's a pleasure to be back again.
Now, first of all, let's give it a bit of a wrap-up for the Geo Sports game, because you had that running throughout August and September to coincide with the Beijing Olympics. How did it all pan out?
We did. As you say, it ran from August to September. We ended up with about 100 people actually playing the game from a number of different countries, predominantly Australia, but we also had people in from the US, and I think we had some in from Canada and the UK. We ended up with nearly 1,000 claims or caches being claimed for the game. So, you know, on average, that's probably 10 each. A whole bunch of people found all of the requirements. You may recall there were actually 30 requirements that were based on the disciplines in the Olympic Games, and you had to reach a total of 888 points. Now, we actually ended up with around about 15 people who achieved that target. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough prizes for everyone, but we also had people that simply wanted to get all 30 requirements finished, and I suppose one of the funnier things was on the very last evening, just watching everyone's logs start to come in. As you may recall, there were 10 prizes, the top five, and then positions 10, 15, 25, 35, and 45. And of course, in order to get into one of the lower positions, You had to be very cunning when it came to the number of points that you were going to lodge at the very last minute. And sitting here around about midnight on the very last night, you could see people making their logs and vying for those spots. They'd get into that spot, somebody would bump them out, they'd log another claim, then jump back into that spot. So I can just imagine the frustration at the other end, but from this end, it was quite amusing to see.
Mm. Following the stats and the points and the ladders and so forth, were there any outstanding performances that you saw come out of the event?
I think there were a lot of outstanding performances. Certainly some caches, from reading their logs, is what we do is we check the terrain, the difficulty, all of that sort of information just to make sure that it's a valid claim. And reading some of the logs, a lot of people went way beyond their normal caching area. So they travelled long distances. They also did a lot more difficult caches than I think they would have normally attempted. Certainly as far as levels of terrain go. And, of course, the way that the points were eventually allocated, it meant that mystery caches gave you higher points. And I'm sure that people like Zitherin in South Australia probably had, in that two-month period, a record number of fines against some of their caches as people were vying for some of the top spots.
Mm. I suppose that's the point of these games, isn't it? To try and get people out of their comfort zone and to try caches that are a little bit more than just the same old, whether it be, you know, the constant drive-bys that they'd be grabbing or the short walks and or the park caches, isn't it?
That's part of it, yes. It's about getting out there and doing different things. So challenging yourself to find a higher terrain or a higher level of difficulty, rather than just, as you say, you know, head out for a drive one day, find a few caches along the way, not necessarily no effort, but they take you to places that you wouldn't necessarily have attempted to go in the past, all in the hopes that you win a geocoin.
Hmm. All right, well, that's the previous game that's been finished, GeoSports. You've got another one starting on the 1st of November, and I'm really keyed up for this one because apparently I'm the inspiration for it. Tell us a bit about this one.
Back earlier this year, I think it was in episode 25 of GeoTalk, you had a small segment on the concept called the well-rounded cacher. And the idea, I think, was that some people were lame for, say, a high find count or high hide count, because in some people's mind it is indeed all about the numbers. There was actually a different way to measure your geocaching roundness. And basically what it comes down to is trying to find every single combination of terrain and difficulty. Now, there are actually 9 different levels of terrain and 9 different levels of difficulty. And if you were to find one of each of those combinations, you would end up with a total of 81 caches. Now, what we've decided to do is actually put together a game where you have an opportunity to enter one of the 3 different levels of the rounded cacher. So you can achieve everything up to a terrain and difficulty combination of 3-3. You can enter up to 4-4, or you could go for the full rounded cacher for a total of, for the difficulty and terrain of 5-5, for a total of 81 caches.
Okay, so the people who are going for the 5-5, the object in that two-month period from the 1st of November to the end of the year is to find one cache in each of those 81 categories. Is that correct?
It actually runs for 3 months. It runs for November, December and January.
Right.
So it'll give you a chance to possibly over Christmas, New Year, head out while most of us get a break. But, yeah, the idea is to actually head out there and in that three-month period find a 1-1, a 1-1 and a half, a 1-2, 1-2 and a half, all the way up to 5-5. Now, for those who can't get there because they either don't have the specialised equipment or they don't have the level of fitness to achieve it in terrain 5, and I know I certainly fall into that category, you can just head out and do everything up to a 4-4 or up to a 3-3.
Excellent. Well, I mean, this sounds like a great game. I mean, certainly some people, like in previous ones, are going to be looking to maybe extend themselves a bit. We don't want people to overextend themselves, but you've got a three-month period, you've got heaps of daylight to do it, and sounds like a lot of fun. Where can we find out more about this game?
Sure. If you head to www.cachinggames.com, and if you then click on games, you'll be able to find the well-rounded cacher. That will give you information about why it was set up, how you go about lodging your claims, and some of the rules and information about some prizes.
And once again, like with previous games, you don't have to be just based in Australia. You can be anywhere around the world to play this.
Absolutely. There is no restriction at all. Any country, anytime, anywhere. Dates are Australian Eastern Standard Time, so 1st of November 2008 through 31st of January 2009. But apart from that, we'd like to have people from all around the world join in.
All right. Well, look, thanks very much, Peter, for joining us and telling us a bit about those games. And look like I better start stretching and getting ready for it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Darren.
Well, once again, the GeoTalk mailbag is pretty empty. Not too many people dropping in emails. I presume that you're all out there finding geocaches. Although I did have one email from Allrounder down in the ACT who was asking if I was still selling the GeoCoins. Fortunately for her, I was. But as of today, I've stopped selling them. I'm down to only four left, and I think I'm going to keep them as special mementos. May even keep one for myself, actually, and set another few loose. But thank you very much to all those who purchased the GeoTalk GeoCoin, and who knows, maybe down the track in another couple of years we might mint one. I got a voicemail on the GeoTalk hotline the other day from Pagelboy down in Wollongong, and I had to have a laugh when I heard this because he's called in from a geocache that took me at least four attempts to find. Let's have a listen.
Hi, I'm Pagelboy, and I just found or found 5 keys in a row. It was really easy, it wasn't hard at all.
Well, there you go. Some people have got it and some people haven't. And it certainly seems as though Pagelboy definitely has geosense when it comes to finding some of those difficult urban micros. Thanks for calling that in. Don't forget, you can call in your own little bit of commentary, whether it be a first to find or a milestone or just an announcement. Call it in on 02-800-50-436. That's 850-GEO. Well, it's time now to announce the winners from the Axis of Evil GeoTalk Video Edition competition. And we had three entries, and you can check those out on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GeoTalk. And we're going to select the winner, and here we go. The winner of the two coins is Zachdul and Cannibal Smurf. So congratulations, guys, from up in Queensland, Zachdul and Cannibal Smurf. Send us your postal address or drop us an email at geotalk@mac.com and we'll post off those coins for you. And also don't forget to check out that link that I've got in the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com, and you can vote for your favourite video for the viewer's choice competition. Well, it's almost time now to wrap up this episode. Before we go, the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question, and it's a little bit hard to get my mouth around, but I'll give you the answers. Of all the geocaches hidden in Australia, 39.35% of them are regular, 34.15% are small, 18.11% are micros, 1.71% are large, there are 2.22% that are other, 4.06% are known, and 0.38 virtuals, which translates to 77 virtuals. Not that many around the country. So there you go. Regulars and smalls are still the winners. Micro's got a long way to catch up, and hopefully it will stay that way. Well, that's all from this episode of GeoTalk. Hopefully in the next episode, we'll bring you a few stories and interviews from the southern state of Tasmania. Until next time, safe geocaching.